Paul Bunyan was a mythical logger in Minnesota who was popularized as an advertising gimmick for the Red River Lumber Company in the early 1900s, all over 100 years ago. Paul Bunyan was described as a giant man. He was accompanied by his Babe the Blue Ox, his trusty steed or animal that pulled logs or trees in the forest, an equally giant animal. And 100 years ago, of course, oxen were used to drag timber out of the forest to the sawmills. And the stories about Paul Bunyan are fantastic tales. It just couldn't possibly be true. But the campfire style stories are purposeful exaggerations, as if it were a contest to see who could tell the wildest story. One example is that Minnesota has over 10,000 lakes because every place that Babe the Blue Ox stepped, a lake was formed in the hoofprints. And Paul Bunyan was a character who was so big that he used small trees for toothpicks. Well, my wife and I traveled to northern Minnesota a couple summers ago, and we saw huge statues of Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox. In fact, I took my wife's picture underneath the ox. I have it in the archive somewhere up in Bemidji, Minnesota. There's another city, Brainerd, and they've got a statue of Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox. And over the years, many writers have added to the stories, that added to this legend of Paul Bunyan. And while growing up, I remember the children's books about Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox and Paul Bunyan's fellow loggers. And there's an event. There's even a Paul Bunyan buffet restaurant in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. Wouldn't you know it, has a logger's theme, all you can eat. As if, you know, Paul Bunyan, of course, could eat a lot. The closest stories we probably hear nowadays that are like Paul Bunyan, here's 100 years later, we hear about Chuck Norris. He's a martial arts expert as well as a TV and movie actor. And Chuck Norris is represented as a fantastic character who is smarter, stronger, quicker than everyone else. And there's pretty much isn't anything that the Chuck Norris legend can't do. And there are websites that have Chuck Norris jokes. Chuck Norris makes onions cry. Chuck Norris can make fire by rubbing two ice cubes together. Or once a cobra bit Chuck Norris's leg, and after 5 days of excruciating pain and agony, the cobra died. Or Chuck Norris was so mature at birth that he drove his mother home from the hospital. I mean, the stories about Paul Bunyan and Chuck Norris are tales. They're just made-up stories. And the tales are entertainment. So when you hear a Paul Bunyan or a Chuck Norris story, you're not expecting the truth. You're expecting a myth or a punchline. But the Bible speaks of different kind of tale, a tale that purports to tell the truth, but the taler has designs to propagate harm or to do someone wrong. The title of today's message is Tantalizing Talebearers. And I'm not targeting the message directly to our local congregation, but rather to the world around us that's frequently deceived or misled by slander and libel. I do want to thank our local congregation here as a studio audience today. When we read a court opinion or a court brief, there's a recitation of the definition of the terms that are used in this court opinion or court document. So I'm going to define a few things today. A tale is a made-up or exaggerated story that may or may not be true. Slander is a spoken lie. Libel is a written lie. And a talebearer is one who transmits slander or libel, either knowingly or unknowingly. Well, not all tales are lies. Jesus Christ used parables to bring out the meaning of his message, as well as to hide the meaning of the message to selected people. Well, today I'm going to address the tales that are false or hurtful or both. So I have 7 points, and the first one is, talebearers are purposeful, but beyond purposeful, they desire to cause harm. We look at Ezekiel 22 and verse 9 in the New King James Version I'll be quoting from today unless otherwise mentioned. It says, "In you," meaning among you, "are men who slander to cause bloodshed. In you are those who eat on the mountains. In your midst they commit lewdness." Well, if we take a look at different commentaries, and I found an interesting website, studylight.org, has a commentary to list the definition, or all the lot of different commentaries on many different verses. And what I pulled out of this was that men who slander to cause bloodshed, meaning those who are participating in pagan sacrifices. And it says, in you are those who eat on the mountainside. They're eating pagan sacrifices. They're participating in it. They're eating this meat. And then in your midst, meaning people among you, commit lewdness or practice evil. This lewdness could be same word is translated as mischief or a heinous crime, wicked devices, a wicked mind or a wicked purpose or a wicked thought. So we have this concept that even amongst people of Israel, there were people that were going out and doing those things. So we think, well, that can't possibly be happen among people who are gathering among believers. Saw an internet meme here not too long ago, and I read it, and I looked at it a little odd first, and it said, if you say the word orange slowly, it sounds like gullible. I tried it. The first big lie is in Genesis 3 and verse 1. In Genesis 3 and verse 1, we read about the first big lie. And the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field of which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And verse 2, and the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Verse 4, then the serpent said to the woman, drumbeat, please, you shall not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. The big lie, saying you won't surely die. Well, how do we know that Satan told a lie? Well, we can turn to John 3:16, probably the most often repeated verse in the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes on him should not perish but have everlasting life. Well, that means it's a possibility of perishing, which puts the lie, shows the lie, Satan's lie, that person, in fact, could perish if they don't believe and take action on a belief in Jesus Christ. In Ezekiel 18:4, we read, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine. The soul who sins shall die. So God is preserving some people, but the ones who sin shall die. Well, I guess the sinners aren't going to make it, so Satan must be lying there. And then, well, who are the sinners? In Romans 3:23, we find out, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Well, that pretty well wraps it up, doesn't it? Puts the lie to what Satan said. And you say, well, what about those, the ones that we read about in the Bible? All of the patriarchs of old in Hebrews 11:13, we're told these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. So even those who had special relationship with God early on that we read about in the Bible, they also died. So we see that Satan desired to limit the opportunities of mankind to join the family of God. So Satan is the chief talebearer with an evil intent. It wasn't just a casual lie that he told. If we turn to John 6, starting in verse 43, we find that Jesus was speaking to those who were not believing what he said in John 6:43. Why do you not understand my speech? Because you're not able to listen to my word? You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he's a liar and the father of it. So we see the source of lies and lying. And we have then the infamous example in 1 Kings 21 about King Ahab and Jezebel, and Ahab was coveting the property next to him and bemoaning King Ahab, you know, to his wife Jezebel, the queen, that he wanted the vineyard and the guy wouldn't sell it, Naboth wouldn't sell it. And Jezebel said, well, I can take care of that. I'll just don't worry about it. You know, I'll take care of it. And we start in 1 Kings 21 and verse 8. So what did Jezebel do? And she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, meaning its authority came from the king, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. He's the targeted fellow whom the land was coveted. And she wrote letters saying, and here's a quote, "Proclaim a fast and seat Naboth with high honor among the people, and seat two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, 'You have blasphemed God and the king.' Then take him out and stone him that he may die." Well, it was a setup. It was an organized lie so that Jezebel could arrange for her husband, King Ahab, to get the property. You see, this setup was following what Satan's wish was, is the desire to cause harm and death. And Jezebel similarly desired to cause harm and death. So the first point is talebearers are purposeful, but beyond purposeful, they desire to cause harm. Point two is the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. And there are two explicit commands not to be a talebearer. And the first one is in Leviticus 19:6. It says, don't be a talebearer. Well, that was hard. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. Well, that's pretty straightforward. Just don't be a talebearer. That's going to hurt people, taking a stand against the life of your neighbor. The second command is in Proverbs 20, verse 19. And I'll summarize it. Don't hang around talebearers. In Proverbs 20:19, it says, "He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips." So we're warned. Don't associate with such people. This is followed up and mirrored in Jeremiah 6 and verse 28. In Jeremiah 6:28, there's a description of these kinds of people. They are grievous revolters, walking with slanders. They are brass and iron. They're all corrupt. Well, if you mix brass and iron, you weaken them both. You now don't have a strong material. They don't make a strong metal. So if you associate with those people, you also will be weak, even if you were one or the other, either brass or iron beforehand. You know, some people have a reputation as being a talebearer or a gossip. And if you want to spread a story, we kind of have an idea who those people are, and we know where to plant the story if we want to plant a story. There's a story of three clergymen who are out on the lake fishing. They got together every week, went out fishing, and they were in the boat. And because they were clergymen, they couldn't really talk about their own shortcomings to their congregation, so they would confess to each other. And one of them said, "I'm really sorry, but I have to admit I have a drinking problem." And the other clergyman says, "Well, you know, we're sorry. You know, we'll be happy to help." The next clergyman said, "Well, I've got a gambling problem. You know, it's just really hard for me." And the other clergyman said, "Well, we're really sorry. We'll do the best we can to help." And they turned to the third clergyman and he said, "I'm a terrible gossip and I just can't wait to get back to shore and get on Facebook." So some people, you know, they're eager to spread that. So point two is that the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. Don't be a talebearer and don't associate with talebearers. The third point is that people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear the tales, whether or not they're true. You know, sometimes a story is like a cup of hot cocoa on a cold day. It just kind of warms, goes right on down, warms things up. Proverbs 18:8 tells us the words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. And I'm sure we've all tasted things that are really good, and they're memorable. Ooh, we tasted those little fun things, little tasty edibles. In fact, the word that's used in Proverbs 18:8 is a slightly different word. In Strong's, it's 5372. And it says to murmur, to whisper, to backbite or slander or backbiter. So that's really delicious when you see somebody. Have you ever gone into a room and all of a sudden the talking stops? And you wonder, what are they talking about? You know, well, how awkward can that be? And so that's usually, or it goes, everything drops to a whisper. In the same exact verse in Proverbs 18:8 is repeated in Proverbs 26:22. And anytime you have the repetition in Hebraic writing, it's for emphasis. And of course, we all know people, they're just giddy when they hear something exciting. You know, they just shake with joy. Whoa, really got something on somebody now. Well, similarly, a tale can repulse somebody with reference to the senses, the physical senses, especially to the senses of taste, the sense of smell, odor. When I was 5 years old, my parents would drop me off at the local city to go to kindergarten. There was no kindergarten at the country school, so they hauled me off to school, and it was only 3 blocks to Grandpa and Grandma's house. So at 5 years of age, I walked home, or walked 3 blocks to Grandpa and Grandma's age. I don't suppose that happens anymore. And I remember going there one day, and a neighbor was visiting, and the neighbor was drinking a bottle of beer. And I was just 5 years old. I had no idea what that was. And I said, "Can I have a taste of that?" You know, that's what they were serving the company. So my grandparents laughed, and they got out a little juice glass, and they poured what looked like apple juice with foam on it. And then they gave it to me. And I drank some. And it lost all desire for anything like beer from that point forward. And I remember that. I just really was not excited about beer. Same thing happened with strawberries. I tried a strawberry, and those seeds and those strawberries got stuck between my teeth. And I says, "That's never going to happen to me again." Never ate another strawberry until I was in college and I was brave enough to try the strawberries. The memory stuck, you know. So sometimes the memories can be exciting for you, or they can repulse you in some way. But for the most part, most people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear the tales, whether they're true or not. That's point three. Number four, a tale will not spread if it's not repeated. If we go to Proverbs 26, verse 20, "Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And when there's no talebearer, strife ceases." Well, I had an opportunity a month ago to do some tree trimming after we had a storm. Plenty of branches down, piled the branches up, and burnt this pile of branches, taller than I was, you know, this whole stack of branches, and burned them all down. And you know, eventually that fire went out because the branches were all burnt up. I didn't put any more wood on that fire. That was all there was. It was all the branches that were there. There was no more fire. And it's like that when the talebearer is gone or is not telling tales anymore, not trying to cause damage to other people. It says the strife ceases. You know, there's a saying that's often attributed to Mark Twain and then later to Winston Churchill, and that is, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes." Well, the earliest mention of this remark, and it's attributed to many people, but the earliest remark that I could find was by a fellow named Jonathan Swift in 1710. And it probably went back before. We just may not have the written record of it. But a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. And there are different permutations of it before the truth can lace its boots up and so forth. And so this calls us to go to James 3 in verse 5. In James 3, verse 5, "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles." A little fire can have the whole forest. And as we saw in California, that happened not too long ago. Burnt a city and torched the edges of others. Verse 6, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature." Wow, that's pretty... That's a lot of fire, and fire is, once it gets out of control, it's gone. And of course, so we want to purge that or control that to the extent that we can. I teach economics, and in there we discuss the Pareto principle. And that is, an Italian economist discovered in the late 1800s that 20% of the people owned 80% of the land. Well, that Pareto principle became known as the 80-20 rule. 20% of something is responsible for 80% of the result. Well, this is true of human nature to a great extent. Certainly in the classroom, 20% of the students cause 80% of the teacher's problems. 20% of the students cause the principal 80% of their referrals and so forth. Having been a sales manager, I can tell you that 20% of the salesmen cause the sales manager 80% of their troubles. But in sales, you also learn that 20% of your customers give you 80% of your business. So this is a human nature. And then in 1981, a fellow by the name of Joseph Sugarman wrote a book called Success Forces. Really, it was about things that will help you to become successful. And in there, I was reading this book. It was actually a gift. 1981, that's been a while now, hasn't it? And he suggested the Sugarman Corollary, named it after himself. He said, well, the 80-20 rule we know is true. But if you eliminate the offending 20%, the things that are bad, your productivity and profitability will go up 30%. Because you won't have to deal with all the bad stuff anymore. You won't have to deal with the problems. You'll be able to focus on what you can do. And I have found that to be remarkably accurate. So if we don't repeat a tale, we're going to dampen down the potential harm that can be done with that tale. So the summary of point four, a tale will not spread if it's not repeated. Point five, just because you know the truth does not mean you have to spread the truth around. Just because you know the truth doesn't mean you have to spread the truth around. Here we can turn to Proverbs 11 and verse 13. Proverbs 11:13, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. Just as the story of those clergymen out on the boat fishing, they could have kept confidences, but one of them just couldn't wait to tell the story, couldn't conceal the matter. Okay, in Proverbs 25:2, it also addresses the issue. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. God provides an opportunity to get rid of our sin, so that we don't have to look back on it anymore. We still have to live with the consequences of whatever we've done. But God's not going to bring it up unless we do. And so it's the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings, meaning of mankind's kings, to search out a matter, going to expose that. How awkward. Wouldn't we just as soon leave our sins behind as we wish to do every week and every year at Passover? And we all know somebody who says, well, if it's true, it shouldn't be any problem to say it, right? Why, it's true. But remember, even the truth can be harmful to some in some circumstances. So we want to be careful with the truth as we are in avoiding a lie. So number five, just because you know the truth doesn't mean you have to spread the truth around. And then comes number six, when somebody says, hey, wait a minute. Isn't concealing a matter akin to lying by withholding the truth? Because some people say that half the truth is still a lie. Therefore, they blurt out things that are harmful to other people. Well, we need to give thought to the consequences of our words before we speak. In Proverbs 12, verse 23, we understand a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. That's a bad result if you just proclaim and say everything that you know. And then, of course, there's the complication here. We simply can't believe everything that we read or we hear. So when somebody says, well, I'm not going to withhold the truth. I'm going to go ahead and spread it out. How do you know it's the truth? So much of what we hear simply isn't true. In Proverbs 18 and verse 17, Proverbs 18:17, the first one to plead his cause seems right. Doesn't that feel that way to you? Somebody comes and tells you their story? Whoa, what an injustice. And of course, they're all telling it from their own point of view. That's terrible. You should seek retribution. You should somehow resolve this problem in your favor. Then there's the last half of the verse. Until his neighbor comes and examines him. Does it stand cross-examination or questioning? People tend to only tell the side of the story that benefits them. They don't tell the whole story. I know one thing, that in training to become a lawyer, the number one thing is that the first thing you find out is that your client is not going to tell you all of the truth. So they whip out their legal pad, and they write down what they think are facts, or what you tell them in the recording are facts. But they know, they've been taught, and by experience, if not in law school, that you're only going to hear some of the truth. And you don't have the full story. And you may not hear it all in one sitting. It may take two or three, maybe surprise later on down the way. It depends upon the searching that comes out. Is the neighbor searching or someone else comes and the cross-examination occurs? In national news here in the last week or 10 days, there was a newly elected governor of Virginia. And he described, when prompted, the step-by-step process that openly implied murdering a child at birth and described the process as a post-birth abortion. Well, the newly elected governor of Virginia is a medical doctor, a pediatrician who's delivered many babies. And he went through very carefully describing that it would be the mother and the doctor's decision if things didn't turn out the way they wanted to do after the birth. Well, the governor's medical school colleagues were aghast. They had concealed the truth of how this governor thought for a long time. So in an effort to stop the governor, the governor's support of this post-birth abortion, or as we would call it, infanticide or murder, they then testified to governor's other actions while in medical school. And then other politicians chimed in. They saw a little blood, as it were, like sharks in the water, and they started piling on and asked for the governor to resign. It's still a hot issue as we speak. At the same time, the newly elected lieutenant governor of Virginia was accused of sexual misconduct, first by one woman, and then by another, and there may be more. And he's been asked to resign because he would then fall into position to be the new governor should the governor resign. Meanwhile, one of those calling for the governor to resign was the attorney general. It's been a very busy week in the news. And he called for the resignation of the governor, and then, as it comes out, the attorney general was found to have committed the same acts that he's accusing the governor of. Ooh, ooh. The newspapers, the radio, the televisions are full of stories about these political events that have gone national, not just in the state of Virginia. Yet with all of the political intrigue, they seem to forget, you know, it's a whole three-ring circus now. You've got all of these players, and they seem to forget what started it all, and that was the governor was supporting post-birth abortions, a shocking crime so heinous that a rational, moral person would describe as infanticide or baby killing. And what's sadly interesting is that those who were so readily wanting to accuse others of crimes and imagined crimes, they were quite willing to overlook some crimes that they themselves or their close friends were guilty of. So, and you say, well, here I've said point six is concealing a matter akin to lying by withholding the truth. Well, some people withheld the truth when they shouldn't have. Other people later finally had a change of heart and chose not to. So the bottom line is we are to use wisdom when deciding what we should conceal and what we should reveal. And then point seven, we live in a world where we must be careful. Slanderers are everywhere. In Jeremiah 9, in verse 3, starting in verse 3, there's a description. In Jeremiah 9, verse 3, and like their bow, they have bent their tongues for lies. Well, we imagine a bow, like in a bow and arrow, you pull back the string and the bow is bent, the arrow is ready. Certainly fitting for Valentine's, right? They've bent their bow or bent their tongues just like a bow for lies. They are not valiant for the truth on earth. They proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me, says the Lord. Everyone take heed to his neighbor And do not trust any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanderers. Everyone will deceive his neighbor and will not speak the truth. They've taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves to commit iniquity. Whoa, that's pretty wild when it says everybody is possibly capable of this, which means we have a personal responsibility to sort through individually and to using the wisdom we talked about in point six to decide and to ascertain the truth. So we live in a world where we must be careful because slanderers are everywhere. Well, today we've talked about talebearers, tantalizing, enticing talebearers. We know, number one, that they're purposeful and they have a desire to cause harm. Number two, we know the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. It means don't be one and don't associate with talebearers. Point three, that people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear tales, whether or not they're true. Number four, a tale won't spread if it's not repeated. Number five, just because you know the truth doesn't mean you have to spread it around. Number six, we're to use wisdom when deciding what to conceal and what not to reveal, and what to conceal or reveal. And number seven, we live in a world where we must be careful because the slanderers are everywhere. Now, I wonder if you thought that I could get through this message without referencing the Ten Commandments. There's a psychology class in school that asked its students to do interviews of people who were over 65. So I had a young lady said, "You're the only old person I know. Are you over 65? And if so, can I ask you some questions?" I had four different students come up to me that way. They aren't mine. They were just on campus. Apparently, I look like I could be that age, and I wasn't going to turn them down. And so they each asked some of the same questions. Some asked different questions, what if type questions. In the last one, a young lady asked, "If you could snap your fingers to make this a better world, what would you wish for?" And I said, "I would wish that everyone would keep the Ten Commandments." And there was this wide-eyed look, and there was this pause. Good answer. Now, I wonder what's going to happen when that gets fed back into the stream, back into the classroom. I don't know if I'll hear about it or not. But I would call to end with Exodus 20, verse 16. In Exodus 20, verse 16, and most of you, if all of you have memorized this, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." It's not just bearing false witness. The emphasis here is against your neighbor. So let's take heed to the thought of tantalizing talebearers, how tasty, how delicious they are, how that they're everywhere. We have a buffet out there in the news, whether it's on the radio, whether it's on television, whether it's in movies, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, on the telephone, whether it's on texting or Facebook or wherever it happens to be. But let's use God's word to help us to sort out the truth and the lie.